Hey, it's Ben Bailey-Smith here.
And Sasha Bates.
And as season one draws to a close of the podcast that puts fictional TV characters into therapy, here's a few special bonus episodes that we're going to chuck out there for you just to answer some of your questions and explore a little bit deeper, because we just haven't got that kind of time, Sash, frankly, have we?
We haven't.
In a normal episode, there's too much to talk about. So coming up, we're going to look at stans, you know, obsessive fans. We're going to look at how problematic characters get away with much, much more because they're basically just buff. And Seinfeld in an alternative universe. As ever, you can expect some naughty words and spoiler-filled chat and all of that. Welcome to Shrink the Inbox. All right, let's kick off with some suggestions. Oh, we love getting them. This is from Switzerland, our first Swiss correspondent. It's Lisa. And she says, hello. I'd really love for you to talk about Dre, Dominique Fishback, from the Amazon miniseries Swarm. Sort of comedy horror thriller vibe. Have you seen this, Sasha?
No, I've not heard of it.
Okay. She says it follows Dre, who's a young woman whose obsession with a pop star takes a dark turn.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
It's a really dark, interesting story about how stan culture goes too far. It's about a broken family dynamics and how destructive grief can become. Thanks and keep up the good work. All right. There's a couple of things in there. Comedy horrors, obviously, you know, can be big on the psychology, but most of the time they are not. I mean, I'm thinking there's definitely attempts, like some of the stuff your man Jordan Peele does. I think he's definitely like, sort of slots into that. Oh, there's laughs and there's horrific things, and I want it to mean this thing about our psyche. Sometimes gets it right, sometimes doesn't. The other thing that's in this is the mention of stans.
Have you ever had a stan?
I did once, yeah. I was in Mumbles. There's a place, it's in Wales, it's called Mumbles. It's like a little coastal town. And I went there to do a gig once. This is in my days of being like a part-time underground rapper, youth worker by day. So I'm not making any money. I'm not doing big gigs or anything like that. I'm just taking what I can get. And I get offered a gig that's half decent money. I guess it would be like £100 or something. But I still got to drive to fucking Mumbles with my DJ. And I get there, and of course, no one's at the gig. It's like in the back of a, I don't know what it was. Like it looked like an amusement arcade or something like that. It's in the back room.
It sounds very Gavin and Tracy so far.
There's no stage, and like there's a few rugby boys who like wandered in, and it was a bit of that. Just got through it, and then I was like, all right, you know, can we just go to the hotel? And the guy who'd booked me, he was like, oh yeah, so you know, there's not really a lot of options this weekend, but don't worry, because I've got you basically self-contained. It's like on top of my flat, it's fine. And I was like, okay. And my DJ, and he's like, yeah, I mean, there should be space. I'm just like, this is not going well at all.
Sounds very dodgy.
We walk into the flat, and in the living room there's like a mantelpiece above the fire. And bear in mind, I'm very underground. People don't really know who I am. This is like very early 2000s. He's got like my mixtape that I put out. He's got like my first single that I put out. He's got a couple of pictures of me.
God.
And they're all on the mantelpiece.
Oh,
and then
God.
There's a Sharpie, and it's just, it looks like there's something about the vibe of it, like how they're all symmetrically laid out, and then the Sharpie at the end. I just got this image of him looking at the Sharpie and then repositioning it and then positioning it again and then positioning it again and then coming to meet me.
Oh.
And it just freaked me out. And I was like, I looked at my DJ and he was just like, we're not fucking staying here. And
sounds terrifying.
We drove all the way back.
From Wales.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. And like, and, you know, at this point we're leaving.
Yeah,
like
no, I don't
midnight,
blame
one
you.
One in the morning or something. Oh, it's horrific. So that's the closest I got to a stan. But, you know, there is a hip hop origin to stans. Because I guess some people miss it, but most people will know it comes from the Eminem song,
yeah.
Stan, about an obsessive fan,
yeah.
And Eminem being such a, you know, a bigger pop cultural influence than half the shows we've talked about in this entire series, has created a word that's entered the lexicon, which is always an interesting thing. When I think about it in screen terms, I think of King of Comedy.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that movie?
Yes,
with
yes.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah, of course.
And he's like a massive fan of Jerry Lewis, who's playing us. Is he playing himself? Or he's playing like a Jerry Lewis
type character. I can't remember. It's so long ago. Yeah.
Oh, it's worth rewatching. It's really, really fucking creepy. What do you think is in the psyche where it spills over into that, I need to cross this boundary and this person needs to acknowledge me.
Yeah.
We need to have this moment together. Like, what?
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
There's a novel by Ian McEwan called Enduring Love, where they have a similar situation where a character played by Rhys Ifans becomes obsessed with somebody. And it's not a famous person, I don't think, if I remember the book and the film rightly. But yeah, people can get really latch on. It's like they represent everything that they want in their life and they can't separate out their desire for that person from any sort of reality. So every time the person says, I don't want you, you are not my boyfriend or girlfriend, they just take it to mean like, oh, they're playing hard to get. And I mean, it happens in real life as well, not just with fans. But it's a sort of an idealization of an image of what you want a person to be. You can't distinguish the representation of what you want them to be from the fact that they are a real person with their own wants and hopes and desires.
Right. It is interesting, isn't it? That your insecurities can manifest themselves in believing that this unattainable person could
it's like the ultimate
gap.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate objectification of somebody. You are what I need you to be, and your own desire for me or your ability to know that I exist is irrelevant because I have decided that that is what you need to be.
I mean, I was obsessed with so many different celebrities, actors, singers in that stage of life when you really get deep into it, when you're a teenager, right?
Yeah.
When you're like a young teen, 13, 14, 15. But I didn't even like write to, you remember fan clubs?
Yes,
I didn't even do that. I was just like, that's too far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm obsessed. I've got the posters and everything. I'm not going to fucking try and talk to them.
No. Well, I mean, that's healthy to be able to understand that just because you love them doesn't mean that they're going to love you back.
That's the thing, right? That's exactly what I thought. Like the fear of like, what if they're just really rude or they just like brush past me?
Well, they do say don't ever meet your heroes, don't they?
They do. And like, as I've got on order and have met heroes. I met one very recently. I was a huge Gangstar fan when I was a teenager, and I eventually met their producer, DJ Premier, and he was bloody lovely.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
Really nice.
Lovely.
So sometimes meet your heroes. I think just judge it in the moment is what I say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes you look over and someone's like, I don't know, in a domestic with their kids, you think, this is not the time to say hello to Tom Hanks. Yeah, play it by ear. I've actually got one here from Avatar, which kind of looks at fame from the inside. This is an email from Vancouver, all the way from Vancouver. And Avatar says, hello, first heard of your show in a Guardian article. It's very highbrow.
Yes. I like the fact that...
A couple of people just swear and talk about... dreams and sex and killing and drugs. And now I'm hooked. I'm recommending it to everyone. One show I'd love to see your take on is I Hate Susie.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's another one I need to
see. Yeah, it's great. I loved it.
Billy Piper's breakdown is depicted in an unreal, fantastical, visually arresting manner that I've never seen before. Thanks, Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things in I Hate Susie is her relationship with fame. Do you ever get stopped on the street? I mean, what's your level of... Do you?
Every single day.
Really? Yeah. And how do you cope with that?
It might not be 10 times a day. It might just be once a day or twice a day.
But it happens.
It's every single day.
Wow. Does that feel oppressive? I think that would drive me up the wall.
It depends on your mood and what you're doing. My brother had written a little play and I was worried that I was going to miss it. So I was hurrying into this venue. It was one of those plays where it's like above a bar.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to go through the bar. And I went in and it just happened immediately. And I was just like, I really don't, I don't have time for a stop and chat and photos. Do you know what I mean?
Just really inconvenient.
I was really like so someone shouted out my name and I was like, hey, how you doing? You know, showbiz smile. And I was like, God, I'm late for a play. I just said it because I was like, that's probably the quickest way. But it's every day. 99% of the time, it's all really nice and friendly. But my favorite people who stop me are the ones that don't stop walking. They don't break stride.
Right.
Hey, man, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Those guys. If you're one of them, I'm just sending my love out to you now. You don't want to waste my time, but the reason I respect you even more is because you don't want me to waste your time. You got shit to do. I love that. Keep doing what you're doing.
Oh. Lovely affirmation.
Yeah.
What you mean to people.
That's really nice. All right. This could end up being a question for you, actually, Sasha. This email is from Ali, who says they are formerly of Dalston. Okay. Hey, Ben and Sasha. I've been loving your podcast since hearing about it when Ben's Inheritance tracks were played on Radio 4. Oh, yeah, I remember that. I gave a big plug. I just plugged the show wherever I go.
Good.
Yeah. And I'm very excited to hear that Top Boy was next on your list. Although I think Sully would be a much more complex, interesting and conflicted subject for your analysis than Jamie. Maybe too much for a 25-minute session? Following Ben's comments about the male characters in This Is Us being too ripped to identify with, I have a similar feeling about the main characters in Top Boy. A show I love, don't get me wrong. Okay, I'm sorry to interject onto the email, but in Top Boy, everyone's a lot younger.
They
tend to be boys, like, they're running around doing this. This Is Us, there's just no reason for these middle-aged men older than me. Anyway, think it'd be much harder to root for the psychopaths that are Duchesne, Sully and Jamie if they weren't also gorgeous looking. Interesting, Ali. Okay. But of course, their lovely faces are part of the pleasure of watching the show, aren't they? Can't wait to hear what you've got coming up. Thanks again for a great listen. Cheers, Ali. Okay, the interesting point that sort of crept out of there, Sash, which is why I think it might be a question for you. Why do we root for the psychopaths and why are producers making psychopaths hot?
Well, I think that...
I'm looking at you, you.
well, yes, exactly. Well, I think they have to make them good looking in a TV show because otherwise we wouldn't root for them, because I think psychopaths are really hard to root for in real life because they've got nothing going for them. Once you get beyond the surface charm, I mean, they are very charming. That's how they get away with it. But then behind that, when you realize that there is nothing.
Yeah, I remember this is why you, when we first thought about doing
Killing Eve,
yeah. I was thinking, oh yeah, we got to do Villanelle.
Villanelle the villain.
And you were like, no, because there's nothing to dig into.
No.
She's a psycho. She has no emotions.
Yes, but she's absolutely gorgeous and wears lovely outfits. Yes. So that you do. And she's also very funny. And of course, she's written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. But I think in TV shows, it is very different because they have to make them watchable and you have to root for them. I don't know how many real life psychopaths are gorgeous. I don't know any real life psychopaths.
I think it's one of those TV tropes. This is one of those movie
bit of dramatic
tropes.
Bit of dramatic license. Amazing. Yeah.
Although I suppose there is narcissism is a big part of it, isn't it? So maybe there's well preferred psychos out there. Let us know if you're one of those. All right. So coming up after the break, we're going to be looking at Seinfeld a bit more, wondering if the characters weren't quite as selfish, and a few more of your favourite people to cover, of course. So we'll see you after the ads, unless you, very wisely, I must say, subscribe to the Take channel, in which case we'll be back right after this little musical ditty. Right, and we are right back as promised. We've got a regular emailer, Sash. We've got someone who actually got in touch more than once.
Oh, a recidivist.
This is Stu from Suffolk, Virginia, not on the east coast of the UK, who's he's got in touch before, and he does have a good way with words, so we had to include this one. Stu says, hello, Ben, Sasha, and the STB production team. I'm a few eps behind and just listened to the George Costanza episode this morning. I, too, find George a bit uncomfortably relatable in how the slightest thing can spiral me out if I don't catch it and self-regulate. It's just so easy to let the mildest anxiety stressor become a mental mountain. You touched briefly on Jerry winding him up at one point, and I'm glad you pointed that out. In a kinder show, Jerry and George would both have an arc where they both grow out of these traits. I can imagine a Schitt's Creek-esque Seinfeld where George's fiancée maybe gets sick but doesn't die, and he learns how to process hard things without spinning out. And maybe Jerry even is able to drop his detachment and be genuinely supportive of his friend. That would, of course, be an entirely different show, but in the non-fiction world, it's what I would hope for. Your mentioning how many people watch the series finale made me think of the finale of another earlier sitcom that actually set and still holds, I believe, the record for the most watched broadcast in America that isn't news or football, which is MASH.
Oh, lovely MASH.
Oh, man. I grew up watching this show in syndication, and the 4077th is near and dear to me. I think there would be a lot to dive into here. The show takes several different personalities, from militant army lifers to zany, rebellious, drafty doctors, throws them into an impossible situation, a medical outpost for casualties in the Korean War, and stirs week after week. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Major Houlihan's insistence on standard operating procedure and following orders and the chain of command in the middle of absolute chaos, or Hawkeye's practical jokes and snide commentary deflecting how torn apart he is over the carnage he can't make sense of and can't do anything about. It's a great show and has some good potential clients, in my humble opinion. Thank you for this show. I'm enjoying it so much. Well, good I mean, chance. What an argument for yeah. MASH. And I mean, it'd be great. I mean, from the start, I've been wanting to see how far back we might go, because I think the oldest show we've done is probably Friends.
I think Seinfeld predates.
Oh, no, wait, Seinfeld, of course. Yeah, yeah, Seinfeld started in the 80s, didn't it? 89?
I think it did, yeah, so yeah,
I think
yeah.
It's the same year as The Simpsons. You're right, yeah. So 89 is the furthest we've gone back. So it'd be great to go back to something even older. I watched MASH as a child as well.
Me
but
too.
Not. It wouldn't have been in syndication. It would have been like a huge rerun for us for some reason. Because presumably it started in the 70s?
Yeah, I don't know. My history, my grasp of history is pretty poor.
In my mind, it doesn't look like the 80s, MASH. Maybe it was. Maybe it ended in the 80s.
I think I was quite young when I watched it.
I was young, but I enjoyed it. I liked,
yeah.
Because there was a guy who, like, was it Klinger?
Yeah.
He was sort of the kind of clown.
Yeah.
He reminded me of Animal from The Muppets for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd be a weird throwback, wouldn't it, if we did MASH?
Was it MASH? Was it Klinger who was kept trying to pretend to be mad in order to get
That's
sent
right.
home?
So he'd like,
yeah.
You know, he'd dress like crazy, put on like lipstick or something, or just come out in his pants. Or he was just always trying something
yes.
different.
Yeah, and they never did send him home because they thought that it was a bit like that Catch-22 where, you know,
yeah.
If you recognise that you're mad, then you're sane enough to stay or something. But yeah, I love that show.
Yeah. All right. Great shout. Thank you, Stu. Who's this one from? Kerry Hagen. Oh, you like this. Teacher of English for years 9 to 13 at the co-educational boarding and day school in Whanganui,
ooh.
New Zealand. Kerry says, I often use your show to spark discussions of literary characters in my senior English classes. I find it interesting that so many of our modern protagonists are so unlikable, and I wonder what that says about modern society. Now, I know she's not strictly a TV character, but have you considered Abigail Williams from Arthur Miller's The Crucible? Well, we haven't because she's not strictly a TV character, but we would if they make a TV series out of it. We would. I think my takeaway from that email is that we're being played in schools in New Zealand.
I know. Amazing. I love that.
I'm hoping that Kerry edits out the swearing. otherwise, we're going to get an email from whatever they call head teachers in Whanganui.
But The Crucible is fascinating. I mean, all of Arthur Miller's work is fascinating.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It would be great if it did become a TV show. But yeah, it's on in. There's a stage version on in London at the moment,
that's right,
actually.
Yeah.
I'd love to see, I haven't been to it, but I'd love to see how they, you know, what the current take on it is, because that it there's something, I don't know, to me, there's something a bit social media like about it, in that sense of somebody getting an idea and it's spreading like wildfire and everybody leaping on that bandwagon. And
yeah,
it's not dissimilar. The witch hunts and the cancel culture and the just that absolute piling in on somebody. Yeah.
The great works always, they find a new relevance. They, you know,
yeah.
It comes around again, I think.
Yeah, they really do. So I don't know if the current production would have any of that resonance in it, but that's just what occurs to me, that predisposition, I guess, that goes from back then to now to want to be part of a sort of a baying horde who kind of points the finger at one person.
We got another Ben who says he's in a markedly unexotic but currently very sunny Birmingham. You take that, really, wouldn't you? As long as it's sunny. ABBS and SB. I only heard about this podcast thanks to Ben's appearance on Radio X. Look, my plugging's going so
it's
well.
It's working.
I don't just do Radio 4, I do Radio X. I'll do anyway. Like, if I'm on, I'm talking about Shrink the Box.
Great.
It works.
It does. Keep at it.
As soon as you described it, I knew it was going to be the one for me. Since then, I've listened to almost all the episodes. Skip Bloodline and Happy Valley because I've not seen those shows yet. Although I will. That's a good shout. I don't think I'd want to listen to our Bloodline one if I hadn't watched Bloodline.
No, although a friend of mine did, and it made her go back and watch it, even though we'd done all the spoilers.
Oh, wow, fair enough. Okay.
But I think it's better not to, but it's great to hear that you can listen.
Absolutely.
Even without having seen the show. That's...
And Ben will be back once he's listened to these watch shows. He says, clearly we have very similar tastes in TV because I've seen all the others. I think it's great becoming taste. Clearer that we're living in a golden age of television, typified by shows that centre around complex and well-rounded characters. And I think this podcast is the perfect way of exploring them. Every episode of Shrink the Box has made me want to go back and watch those shows again, which I think is a testament to how good you two both are at bringing their richness to life. Here's some character thoughts from Ben. Dozens I'd like you to hear about. Curtin from This Country. Carrie from Homeland. Anyone but especially Shauna from Yellowjackets would be perfect.
I also suggested Yellowjackets early
one
on.
I've not seen. He says, because of the formative trauma and the results 25 years later, Joe Goldberg from You. No, not for me. No psychopaths. No. Too boring. Okay, but I appreciate it, Ben, and I love the love. And he's got one more suggestion, Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
The ultimate. When Homer keeps coming back, and I think we can't ignore him for much longer. I'd love to see him pop up in season two. And if we do Homer Simpson, that would be our joint oldest alongside 89 Seinfeld. So there we go. We are working our way back.
But it shows the quality that they're still enduring now, that these shows started in the 80s and we're still talking about them.
Oh, man. We're still watching absolutely. Them. The quality of the writing and the quality of the characters, those are the two key things that keeps it going.
Mm.
It's interesting that he says that we're living in a golden age of television. I think that's at threat with the way the industry's going at the moment. I mean, the writers have been on strike for half this series that we've been celebrating. Writers.
Yeah.
Writers have been on strike.
Yeah, and the actors have just joined.
And now
them.
The actors have joined. And, you know, we've got to be careful because we love all this content, but if we don't support the industry properly, all that's going to be left of your golden era of television is going to be fucking cookery shows, man.
Yeah.
Reality shows. And that leaves me and Sash without a podcast.
Mm.
We'll just have to work backwards.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing I Love Fucking Lucy.
Yeah, Mary Tyler Moore.
support your writers, support your set designers, support your VFX artists.
Mm.
If you notice shonky VFX in any recent movies, probably because the VFX artists are being paid peanuts. Anyway, that's my rant over. It came right in the middle of Ben's email. I'm so sorry, Ben, but thank you for the love. All right, let's do another one next week. Sash, you up for that?
Yeah, I'm up for that. I love hearing from our listeners.
Wicked. All right, well, thanks to the production team as ever. Our production management is Lily Hambly. The assistant producer is Marnie Woodmead. Social media is Jonathan Amieri. The studio engineer is Teddy Riley, and the mix engineer is Gulliver Tickle. The senior producer is Selena Ream, and the exec producer is Simon Poole. Do follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts to get new eps. Tell everyone you can. We can make more. If you want to listen to Shrink the Box and get Kermode and Mayo's take ad-free and all their bonus stuff, you know what to do by now. Subscribe to Extra Takes. Start your free trial now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Shrink the Box show page on Apple Podcasts, or just go to extratakes.com on your browser. So if we're going to do it again next week, Sash, what should we build this nonsense around?
Well, I think we have more to say about ghosts. We didn't
Ghosts didn't get a fair swing of the...
No, and they're so interesting. And I think they really represent...
Show.
Yeah, they represent a lot of different things that we could maybe pick up on. So
we weren't allowed to waffle at the live show. No, that's the
problem. No.
We had to get in and get out.
We did.
Like, you're done. Move on. There's another show coming in. Probably Louis Theroux's coming in now. Fuck off. Okay, we can give the ghosts their due. And that's going to be good as well because... It's probably the only show, no, definitely the only show that we've done where the writers are the actors, are the characters, are the writers, are the actors.
Yes.
You know what I
mean? Well, Jerry Seinfeld is also the writer and the character.
Yeah.
But
second time I've forgotten what Seinfeld being an originator. Yeah, Jerry writing for Jerry. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But it is great that the writers are also the actors in Ghosts. You feel it's a real kind of labour of love.
And it gives it an extra layer of richness, I think. Different from your average sitcom. All right, can't wait for that. And obviously more of your emails. Keep gushing, it's fine. If you've got some issues, send them in as well. You got issues with anything that we... Because, you know, sometimes I think, you know, that especially with the amount of professionals that we got listening, maybe sometimes I think, oh, but actually, there's this other layer to that you haven't even mentioned.
Yeah.
So don't be shy.
Yeah.
Sasha's not precious. And no. I learn shit every week. So I'm not going to be like, no, that's nonsense. You're thinking of attachment theory. No, I'm not. I'm going to be like, fuck, wow, my brain's been blown. So please do write in. And we will see you for another Shrink the Inbox next week. Until then, ta-da.